Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked about Samuel Alito and the flag and Greg Abbott. And this is the episode where Sarah was finally ready to put people on a Falcon Heavy. It's kind of awesome. Here's the show. Before bed last night, the New York Times breaks a big story about Samuel Alito's house running an upside-down American flag in the days in January of 2021. So
is that a distress call? Is that a distress call?
It is a distress call, yes. Yeah. So this is a universal distress call. It's an upside-down American flag. And while two cases pertaining to the overturning of the attempts to overturn the election were still pending before the Supreme Court, and I don't know. Doesn't seem good.
Well, hold on. It used to be that I was kind of kidding because it used to be the universal symbol of a distress call.
Right, and now it's a QAnon thing.
Now it's a It's like a right. It was like a stop the steal emblem at the time.
Right, and stop the steal and Q.
Right. So this comes out. It's a photo, but it's from back when these cases were in front of him in the Supreme Court. Whether or not, you know, Trump, could send the false electors and everything. And so while that's in front of him, and this is what the thing that's wild about the Alito flag thing, it's just really crazy if you think about it in the context of at Alito's house, there is an upside down flag in solidarity with the Stop the Steal folks. Over at Justice Thomas's house, his wife is relentlessly texting the Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, saying, like, do the coup harder. Why aren't you cooing harder? And yes. To think that both these gentlemen...
I've got a fever, and the only prescription is more coup.
Yeah. That both these gentlemen did not recuse themselves or were involved in this. You know, a lot of times people talk about the courts... the courts are discrediting themselves or whatever due to like their positions on a board. I think that's not why people are losing faith in the court. This stuff is why people are losing faith in the court. There is no mechanism of accountability. And that is a problem. Like it's a legitimate problem now. Norms, we don't have them anymore.
Coming on the heels of the Mitch McConnell maneuvering to take those two Senate seats, the Merrick Garland seat and then the Ruth Bader Ginsburg seat, to then have members of the court who look at that, and if you look at that and don't understand that that poses a danger to the legitimacy of the court, then I can't help you, right? If you look at that and just think, hey, that's just hardball politics, nothing wrong with it. Everybody should just put on their big boy pants. I can't help you. Like that's not how it works.
Are there people saying that? What is the reaction?
The Republican position on the two seats is that we acted according to the letter of the law, so all's fair. Suck it, right? That's just,
okay.
You know.
But forget that. Like forget that one.
Well, no, but this is what I'm saying. So with that as the backdrop to this, though.
Yeah.
Right. So you have the ground already seated, which I think would impose an extra duty on anybody who sits on the court to really go out of their way to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. Right. And to the extent to which Thomas and Alito seem to give no fucks at all about that. And they just like, hey, the First Amendment entitles me to be able to do it. It's like the thing, you know. It's like the McConnell thing. The law entitles the Republicans to do those things, so they get to do them. And the law entitles them, you know, Mitch McConnell, to put his flag upside down on his pole. So who's going to stop him? He doesn't have any duties to anybody else.
Not Mitch.
We all have duties to him, you know? Yeah. And I Man. And his excuse is the same as Thomas's. He's like, oh, my wife did it. My wife did it because she was in a dispute with some neighbor who had an anti-Trump sign. I'm like, I'm sorry. If you live in the house with a Supreme Court justice, you don't get to play the lawn sign passive-aggressive political neighborhood fight game. You don't put lawn signs up. You don't put bumper stickers on your car. And is it unfair and an abridgment of your rights? Maybe. I don't know. But on the other hand, one member of the household has a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. Right. You know, it is incumbent upon you to simply smile and be friendly with everybody, you know?
Yeah. I know that, like, we demand judicial temperament from the justices. And I think that it's not that it extends to the spouses exactly. Like, their temperament doesn't have to be exactly the same. They do have to, I think, carry the burden and the, what's, like, I don't know why I'm blanking on the word. Like, it's an honor. Like, the burden and the honor of the role that their spouse gets to play in our country, it is incumbent upon them to behave slightly above the political fray.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. It's like, on one level, it's this sort of frightening thing. Like everybody has lost all sense of decorum. There is no sense of a higher purpose, higher calling, higher expectations. But then on a baser level, you're like, we expect more out of teachers and cops. I mean, like, you are in the highest, like, lots of people who have public roles, we expect a little better of. And just because they don't always meet it doesn't mean that, like, it's even just, like, sort of general, like the idiot in your town is doing this. Like, the jerk that nobody wants to hang out with, that never gets invited over, behaves this way. Not, like, a citizen in good standing or, like, a community member in good standing doesn't behave like this. It's all embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, but I got some good news for you. Thomas and Alito aren't going to be on the court much longer. So that's the good news.
Because Eileen Cannon's going to replace them?
Because once Trump is back in power, both those guys are going to be replaced by 35-year-old Eileen Cannon types.
Yeah.
So, you know, the truth is, there may come a time in the very near future in which we view Sam Alito, who at least has an intellectual pedigree, whether that's worth anything or not, and who at least has the embarrassment to say that it was his wife who put up the upside down flag, where we look back on that and say, boy, remember the good old days?
Yeah. Can I just say on the wife blaming, I don't know if you saw Bob Menendez, disgraced senator from New Jersey.
So explain this
he
to me.
Also blamed his wife.
But so his she's wife now got diagnosed breast with breast cancer. And, dying
and I don't know if she's dying. She was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't
hope
know.
She's not husband. Dying.
I also hope she's not dying. But, like, husband and wife can't testify against each other. But they're, like, all putting it all on her. And, like, what is it? Like, what a scumbag. Everybody's a scumbag. So I was on CNN earlier and just, like, going through the stories. And it's, like, Michael Cohen and, you know, got, you know, locked or got, like, knocked around in court because Trump is a mob boss who surrounded himself with scumbags. And so when they go to testify against him, they lack a certain amount of credibility because they too are scumbags. And then Menendez is blaming his cancer-ridden wife for their stealing of gold bars and their corruption. And then Alito is blaming his wife for siding with the Stop the Steal people, the insurrectionists, while he is overseeing the Supreme Court case. I will say, you know, I do my best. Take the sunny side, be optimistic, see the best in people. But, like, the scumbags are ascendant today, and it is deeply disturbing.
You know what? That's not what disturbs me. Mm. What disturbs me is that I think I think you also believe that at the elite level, none of these people actually believe that the election was stolen. Right,
Ginny Thomas might. I think she's nuts.
But put her aside for a moment because I'm going to get to that. Right, like, okay. At the elite level, it's all just kabuki theater. right? They know it wasn't stolen, but they want power and they got to say what they got to say, et cetera, et cetera. So you have somebody like Ginny Thomas, who's just an insane person who's also not very smart. She's just,
yeah,
I'm sorry. She's not a smart person. I've read her emails. And it is disconcerting to see that Justice Thomas might also, a person who we, you know, all thought was like pretty smart, might also agree that the election was actually stolen, and that Sam Alito's wife might also like actually believe that the election was stolen. Like, these are people who you expect to at least be doing the performance kabuki dance, but it turns out it's like they're reading the Epoch Times and just nodding along. Yeah. That's disturbing, right? As we move from everybody just playing a role to people just, they faked it until they've made it and actually believing, everybody becoming a true believer. That's not great. Not great. All right. You wanted to talk about the big Marjorie Taylor Greene throwdown in the House yesterday. I tried listening to this and I couldn't quite follow it. Tell me all about it, Sarah.
Okay. So there is a congresswoman named Jasmine Crockett, and Marjorie Taylor Greene was attempting to be awful to her and criticize her, and she started making fun of her fake eyelashes. And by the way, this is in an oversight headed by James Comer, by the way, one of the most useless members of Congress, the one who keeps trying to say that the smoking gun is just around the corner on impeaching Joe Biden. All right, so this gets his committee. Marjorie Taylor Greene starts, go find the audio of this. It's so insane. She starts saying something about fake eyelashes to Jasmine Crockett, at which point AOC goes in to defend Jasmine Crockett and is actually sort of trying to call a point of order to Comer to say, like, I want this put in record, what she's saying. She's attacking somebody personally. Marjorie Taylor Greene, though, is like mocking her while she does that, like taunting her and going, did I hurt your feelings? And so all of a sudden, AOC kind of breaks into like, oh, girl, you don't want this, like, kind of hits with that. And so it devolves
Jenny
from there.
From the block.
And then Jasmine Crockett calls Marjorie Taylor Greene like a butch-bodied builder. I mean, like, they just are trading the nastiest insults. They're yelling at each other. And then Comer, it's not funny. I'm not laughing. But then Comer, like, he's looking around and he's like, I'm sorry, but I'm very deaf and my hearing aids aren't working. And I didn't understand a word any of you ladies said. And can somebody repeat that?
I don't understand women.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I would say it was not a shining moment for women. But as you may recall, there have been another number of instances on the House floor recently. One member called one of the guys called another one tubby when they were fighting over the speakership, I think. There was also almost the fisticuffs came to during the 15th round of
not
McCarthy's.
Between a Democrat and a Republican, but between Republicans.
All the Republicans. And so I just, you elect clowns, you get a circus. This is what is happening in Congress right now. Like, on one hand, again, this is, you can sort of take it on to, on one hand, if you watch this clip, it's so stupid and so, like they're like 10-year-olds that you sort of want to laugh, but it's not funny. It is chaos there, and there is, it is the result of, you know, now we have all these incentives for this performative, do nothing Congress that just does this for the cameras, and it's so embarrassing. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is there to incite all of this. Like, I mean, now
stick
with the 10-year-old theme, right? Like, she started it and she goes so low. It's so disgraceful. I mean, obviously she's a terrible person. Obviously she's not a bright person. But thanks Kevin McCarthy for elevating her and acting like she's a serious legislator. You suck, man. I just, the more I see him post Congress, and I didn't like him to begin with, but he has been awful and petty, and the amount of bad judgment he had during his brief time as speaker, just outrageous. I am, it is just scumbags on scumbags on scumbags today.
Question. If you were to show this to your focus groups, what percentage of them would be outraged by it? And what percentage would like the real talk? Would like that they're not doing the powdered wig, you know, they're out there mixing it up, and I like people who are going to fight and stand up for themselves.
That's not what would happen.
Okay.
What would happen is that they would laugh at it, condemn it, but also sort of be like, yeah, like, this is what I like, this soap opera circus. And it goes back to, if you remember, there's no reason you would remember this, but in the focus group episode I did with Joe Perticone about Congress and about where we talked about Congress with voters from their district, one of the things that now has really stuck with me that I think is sort of a deep insight that came from those groups is voters talk about wanting results all the time, right? They have at least things that they want done, right? They want results.
And that's why Joe Biden's ahead by 15.
But they do not want compromise, right? They do not want compromise. In fact, they want the opposite. They want you. And so when you have a population, a voting population, that wants there to be no compromise, but lots of results, that leads you to the authoritarian strongman instinct, right? Because you don't have the ability to be like, oh, you get incremental change by everybody negotiating, everybody giving up a little bit, everybody being a little bit unhappy, a little bit happy. Ultimately, you get some things done and you move things along for the American people. Like, no one's got the patience for that. No one's interested in that. But that, my friends, is governing. That is the thing. And they're not doing it. They're not doing it. And the American people are not going to hold them accountable for doing it because they think there's just some magic button you can push where they get the things that they want without anybody giving up anything.
But it's the Republican leaners who believe. I mean, it's not clear that the Democrats believe this. Democrats seem to like the compromise. The Democrats seem to, I mean, the Democrats have policy goals they want. They wanted the Affordable Care Act, even though they didn't get the single payer stuff they wanted. Right. And so they really like the Affordable Care Act, even though it was a compromise for them. And the Republicans, I mean, they say they want results. I just don't believe it. And I mean, as part of the reason I would submit as evidence, the total 100% Republican uncaring that the wall wasn't built during Trump. Right. I mean, I have yet to hear a single Republican anywhere.
I mean, the wall was a stand-in for wanting something done about immigration.
Sure. But it was like deeply important to them and he didn't deliver it.
Nobody separated a bunch of immigrant children from their parents.
Right.
And they felt good about
that. He is now saying that he will round up and deport 11 million illegal immigrants. That's one of his campaign promises this time. That is not possible. That simply is not possible because, as I've said, some country has to agree to receive them. Like this is, you can't fly a C-130 over, Mexican airspace and just kick people out with parachutes on them and have them drop. Some country has to agree to receive them. And there is no country that is going to say, yes, we will take 11 million people from America. That's simply not going to happen. And so we'll get, you know, if Donald Trump is elected, he will, I don't know, send back 50,000 people or something and, you know, maybe round up a few other people and put them into a camp somewhere while they negotiate repatriation to their sending countries. And that will be enough, right? Like, because they don't actually want all 11 million people. In the same way, they didn't really want a wall. They just like to say they want these things. And that's what's weird, because that is compromise, right? I mean, if their position had been, we want a wall from the Pacific to the Atlantic, but we understand that that's not possible. And so we'll compromise on building 190 miles of it in places that we think are important, right? That is in effect what they got, because Trump didn't deliver on it. But it wasn't the result of compromise. It was the result of incompetence. And they don't care about that. They would hate compromise. Had Trump forged a compromise where that was the legislation that passed, they would have been very angry. But they are happy to have that same result so long as it's not the product of compromise, because they don't care about the results. They don't care at all about the results. All they care about is fighting and hurting the people they hate.
I just don't think you can paint a broad brush. I think people really want healthcare costs lowered. I think people want the economy to be good. I think they want jobs. I think they want something done about immigration. And so they're willing to tolerate lots of imperfect measures that look like doing something because they feel like nothing's been done. I won't ascribe the absence of any interest in policy outcomes. I don't think that's quite right. I just think that people have a very people don't have the attention spans or the emotional thresholds anymore to withstand what it takes to actually move things forward.
So I think in a way this lets a segue. I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this. The Daniel Perry pardon. Have you followed this at all?
Say it again. The what?
So yesterday, Greg Abbott, governor of Texas,
pardoned
Daniel Perry. Uh-huh. I have followed this case since from the beginning, and I've written about it for Today, not published yet, so you don't have to worry about not having read it.
Sweet.
And what we have is an open and shut case. So this guy, Daniel Perry, goes and drives his car into a mass of protesters. One of the protesters is open carrying, which is legal in Texas. And this guy seems to be doing all of the right things, actually. So he goes over to the car to try to protect the people who have, getting hit by the car. And when Daniel Perry goes to get out of his car, because they're protesters, where the guy's like, don't get out of your car. Just keep driving and go. Get out of the way. And instead, this guy, Daniel Perry, pulls his gun and shoots him 5 times and kills him.
Didn't the guy who walked up, didn't he have a gun?
He did. So he had open carrying, but his finger was not on the trigger and the gun was pointed at the ground. Right? This is Second Amendment right. You're allowed to do this. And Perry's initial testimony to the police was, I was afraid that he would raise his gun at me. And so that... like, there. So this is, if you are a Second Amendment person who cares about the Second Amendment, you would say, we do not want to allow people to murder people who are exercising their Second Amendment rights simply on the fear that maybe they might shoot someone, right? You would say, this is bad for the Second Amendment. Further, the fellow who was killed, Garrett Foster, was a veteran. Normally, people on the right like veterans. Further, we now learn the fellow who did the shooting, the murderer, was a groomer, active online, searching out young girls and sending sexually explicit texts to minors. Ooh. I heard they don't like groomers. And yet, the governor of Texas has gone and pardoned Daniel Perry because the person he murdered was part of a Black Lives Matter protest. And so Governor Perry has to signal that it's okay to shoot those people because those are the bad people. And the only reason to do this is because he thinks it's good for him politically, right?
Is there any other explanation for why he did this?
No.
That straightforward?
It is so open and shut. This guy has a long history and for months had been sending messages to people and talking about how he couldn't wait to go kill some protesters and he was itching to find some protesters to kill. One of the things they presented at trial was a conversation he had with one of his buddies in which he was saying, no, if I could just get them to be sort of threatening, then I could kill them and claim self-defense. And his buddy, it was like, yeah, no, look, you and I went through the same firearms training. You can't go and create a dangerous situation and then go on a shoot and have it be a good shoot. And so this guy had been working himself up to this. Also, he is a horrible racist. Again, I'm not going to say any of the things, but the evidence is all there and was all presented in court. He hated black people. Like, and not in an Archie Bunker way, but also not cool, but it's different, right? There's a different I think those black people are lazy. No, this is like he wanted to kill black people. And so Abbott pardons him.
Pardon him like as part of a big group, or did he go out of his way to single this guy out and just pardon him?
This guy. This guy. Singled him out.
Greg Abbott turned out to be a real lousy dude.
It's worse than that. In 2023, the Texas legislature passed and Abbott signed a bill which allows the state to go after rogue prosecutors. So I get the sense that everything that's done in the Texas legislature is done performatively to make Fox News happy. The idea being that Texas is filled with locally elected district attorneys who refuse to prosecute crimes because they're so woke. I was not aware that this was a problem in Texas. All these woke prosecutors. Texas Republicans are now trying to remove the district attorney who prosecuted the shooter, Daniel Perry, on the grounds that he was prosecuting somebody he shouldn't have. So they're using the law which they passed because they said there are woke prosecutors not prosecuting enough criminals to now try to remove from office a prosecutor who prosecuted a guy who shot and murdered someone because they got to send the signal to other prosecutors, you can't prosecute people who kill the bad guys. I just don't see any other way to interpret that. It's not just that we're going to pardon this fellow. We're going to send a message to every other district attorney in the state that you are playing with your career if you try to prosecute somebody who kills people from the out-group, because that's okay. And this is one of the most depressing things I've ever seen.
I am. Today is the day that you might get me to put some people on the Falcon Heavy.
Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.